This is the first in a series of two lectures on task-centered system design. Task-centered system design is a close relative of task analysis, which is something we talked about as an IDEO method. And if you recall, I showed you a picture of an airplane cockpit and essentially tried to argue that task analysis is a mechanism to understand whether or not it's possible for people to understand the requirements of what they need to accomplish given the interface that they have. So task-centered system design is essentially a method, a four-step method that you can apply to design interfaces based on a set of based on an understanding of how and what users need to do. Once you have that analysis, you can generate these designs, and then you can also use task-centered system design to evaluate these interfaces to understand whether or not it's possible for people to accomplish the tasks that they would like to do. So next slide. In today's, what we'll be talking about is describing how you can use task-centered design and why you would use task-centered system design. And then I'll describe the four phases of task-centered design. And then I'll talk about how to develop good task examples. In the second lecture, what I'll talk about is I'll essentially walk through an example of a task-centered system design and evaluation, and we'll think about how it's actually applied there. Next slide. So I want you to imagine that you have been contracted to help design an interface or to evaluate an interface for a company called Cheap Shop Catalog Store. Now, Cheap Shop Catalog Store, the way the company works is that the front area has a bunch of paper catalogs. And in each catalog, they have items, right? And you can read about the particular items. And then it also has an item code or an item ID. And people fill out sheets of paper with item codes of items that they would like, as well as the amounts that they would like. Then they take this form, this is a paper form, to the front counter, or they take it to a clerk who then reads the list and then brings the item from the back room onto the front counter. And then people pay for the items that they would like. So this is how the Cheap Shop Catalog Store currently works. So let's suppose you came up with a design for trying to address this. Next slide. And let's suppose this is what your design looked like. And I'll just walk through this really quickly. So what you would do here, instead of perhaps filling out this piece of paper, they've decided to go paperless, right? So something that you would do is you would fill in your name, your phone number, your postal code, your province, your city, your delivery address, today's date, your credit card number, and then you would fill in the catalog items, right? So you'd fill in the catalog number there, you fill in the quantity, perhaps the cost, and then the total would be generated. If you would like to add more items, so you want to purchase more items, you would hit the next catalog item button there, and then it would bring you to screen two, so you can do the same thing over again. Once you have entered in all of your items, then you can hit trigger invoice. So I want you to think about this particular design, and I want you to think about how are you actually going to evaluate whether this design is any good, right? One of the things that we talked about in class is essentially bringing this interface to a set of users and seeing what they're going to do with it, right? That seems like a reasonable action that you would take. But I'm going to argue that even that might be considered as expensive because it requires that you get potential users. It requires that you bring them in and actually see whether or not they can actually use the interface. That's going to cost you time, right? So if you hit the next slide, and you can toggle between this slide and the previous now, so you can take a look at the interface. I want you to think about, you know, and this is actually something that happens, right? People actually look at an interface and they try to decide, well, you know, what does my gut say? Is this going to be a good interface? Can you judge whether it's going to be a good interface based on how familiar it is to other things? Do you judge it based on how it looks? And even if we find problems with an interface, how do we judge whether it's a serious problem or a not-so-serious problem, right? Do we miss things? Is our opinions correct, right? And so this is the problem that essentially task-centered system design is trying to address. rather than simply relying on your gut and relying on your instinct to decide whether or not this interface is any good, task-centered system design proposes a sort of algorithmic approach to figuring out whether or not the interface is actually a good one. So I'll take you to the next slide here. So if you think about requirements analysis from a software perspective, primarily what we're thinking about is exactly what functions should the system have, right? And often the way we think about our users is that there are these elastic people that will actually basically fit into however our system is actually designed. They'll figure it out, right? So the example that I showed in class was, you know, is it possible to log into your webmail from my.ucalgary.ca? Yes. So it fulfills that requirement, right? But I also argued at that time that it wasn't a very usable solution, right? So next slide. An end user's perspective on requirements analysis is really asking the question, exactly who would use the system to do exactly what, right? So here is an example of a real person, Mary Franklin. And she's a real person with real constraints trying to get her job done. And you can imagine she's whatever you want her to be, right? Maybe she's a teacher. Maybe she's a professor. Maybe she's an admin somehow. Maybe she's the boss of a company. She's trying to do paperwork here. She's got time constraints. She doesn't have all the time in the world to figure out how your system works. And maybe she's just trying to log into email. And that's hard, right? So this is no good. Next slide. So task-centered system design really takes into account an end user's perspective. And it has four major phases. The first phase is called identification. Second phase is called requirements. Third phase is called design. And fourth phase is called walkthrough evaluations. All right? So most of what I'm going to talk about is going to be in that fourth phase, the walkthrough evaluations. That's what we're going to be doing in the next lecture. So today what I'm going to focus primarily on is number one, identification, where you try to figure out who your specific users are and what it is that they're actually trying to do in a concrete way. Right? What are their goals is one way to think about this. The second thing to think about is requirements. So given a set of tasks that we generate from the identification phase, we got to figure out which of these we're going to actually support and which of the users we're actually going to support. Because remember that for many systems, it's rare that you have exactly one type of user. That is, that users vary in all sorts of interesting dimensions. The third is to actually do some design. So you base designs, representations, dialogue sequences on the tasks that you've come up with. So this is essentially the brainstorming phase, right? And then with the walkthroughs, these are where you actually evaluate the designs. Given your tasks, you kind of step through each step of your interface and ask yourself the question, is it possible for somebody to know what to do given the interface that they have? Are they motivated to do what they need to do at this point? Right? And going through that walkthrough, what you'll find is all sorts of problems arise in your interface. And those give you avenues to fix those problems too. Next slide. So just to foreshadow a little bit, here's an example of a good task, right? So I'm just going to read this. Fred Johnson, who is caring for his demanding toddler son, wants a good quality umbrella stroller. Red is preferred, but blue is acceptable, right? He browses the catalog and chooses the JPG stroller. The cost is $98. The item code is 32306-6697. He pays for it in cash, and he uses it immediately. Fred is a first-time customer to the store. He has very little computer experience, and he types very slowly with one finger. He lives nearby on Deer Bottom Avenue Northwest. So if we take a look at this particular task, we notice that, in fact, or this task description, we notice that the task does a very good job of describing what it is that Fred wants, what are his goals. It also does a very good job of being very concrete. So, for example, we've actually given Fred a name. He has a Fred Johnson, right? We know that he has a toddler son with him, and we also know that he wants a good quality umbrella stroller. We know that he's going to pay for it in cash. And then we have some properties of who Fred is. So he's a first-time customer of the store. He has very little computer experience. He's a very bad typist, right? He lives nearby, right? So all of these things are very concrete properties or descriptions of not only the task in terms of what Fred's goals are, but also very concrete in articulating the details of what Fred is like and what Fred would like to have done, right? One of the things that you'll notice is that this task description is not coupled with any sort of interface. So that is that none of the task description has details about how he's going to interact with any interface or how he's going to futz around with particulars of the interface design that you have. The reason that you exclude those kinds of details is that it allows us, therefore, to evaluate and compare different designs with a given task. So if we hit the next slide, so just a quick discussion about that task description. Fred has many properties of our expected user. Many customers are first-time shoppers. A good number have no computer experience. A good number are poor typists. We would know this had we done some research, okay? The second thing is that we notice that the task type is routine and important. So this is something that we see many of our users wanting to do. Many people often purchase only one item. A good number of these people pay by cash. And as with Fred, people have a general sense of what they want to buy, but decide on the actual product only after seeing what is available. So just to remind yourself, it was the fact that Fred wanted a good quality umbrella stroller, a red one preferably, but a blue one is okay. And what we discover, or what we articulate in this task description is that he browses the catalog and he finds the JPG stroller somehow. Right. All right. Next slide. So that's where we want to end up at the end of today. Okay. So we have four phases to make our way through. So in the first phase, your goal is to identify users and their tasks. Now, if you think about many of the IDEO methods that we've talked about in the past, this is what these methods are trying to help you accomplish. They're trying to help you figure out and get in touch with real people who will be potential users of your system. And your goal in doing this, in doing these kind of exploratory methods, is to figure out what are your sort of prototypical categories of people. What are the properties of the people? What are the properties of the tasks that they're trying to do? And you're trying to find kind of common examples, things that happen very frequently. And you're also trying to find extremes, so very unusual circumstances as well. Now, the reason you're looking for extremes is that that gives you sort of an anchor upon which you can decide what is actually more typical, right? So not only do you want to be able to think about users in this way, you also want to think about their tasks in this way. So who are the typical users that come in? What are the properties that describe them? And then secondly, what are the tasks that people are trying to accomplish? And what are the properties that describe those? And when you think about these tasks, you want them as real as possible, that they're concrete, that they're detailed examples. Right? What is routine? What is infrequent but important? What is infrequent and incidental? Right? So you want to be able to distinguish between these kinds of tasks. Next slide. So how can you actually go about doing this? These are things that we've talked about already. But you want to immerse yourself in a real person's environment. Perhaps observe people in their actual work context. Interview people as they do their work. Shadow a person over the course of his or her day. Actually be one of these people that is actually trying to accomplish one of these tasks, right? Serve people's requests is an example of actually feeling what it is to be like on the other side of this, perhaps, right? So there's a lot of different ways that you can actually do this. One of the situations that you may encounter is you feel like there are no real tasks, or no real users. We've already talked about the Palm Pilot example in the past, but the point is that you can kind of give people circumstances where they can put themselves in the situation of having real tasks, or where they can imagine themselves as users themselves, right? In the next slide. So if all else fails, at the very least, describe who you expect your set of users to be, right? And describe what you expect their set of tasks to be. And these will become your sort of assumed users and tasks. And the point is that these are assumptions that you have, and you need to verify these assumptions as you go, Okay, so you can verify them later on by essentially distributing these descriptions to people later on and asking them if they feel like these accurately describe, you know, what might be happening. So we hit the next slide. So the other part of phase one is developing really good task examples. So we've already talked about this a little bit, but here are some of the properties. One, you want to be able to say what the user wants to do, but not say how they would do it. So you want to really talk about what their goals are, right? And I've already told you that you don't want any of these task descriptions to make any assumptions about what the interface is. The second thing is that these task examples are supposed to be very specific. They say exactly what the user wants to do. And if you take a look at that example that we had, it actually talks about actual items that the user would somehow want to input, right? So it got into the detail not only of which stroller it was, but it got into which item code it was and how much it cost, right? Next slide. Three, so it describes a complete job. So not only little bits and pieces here and there, but actually a complete job, everything that somebody would be trying to do when they were trying to accomplish something, right? And this forces a designer to consider how different interface features work together, right? And the reason why you want to do this is because it forces you to consider where the information comes from, where the information goes out to, and, you know, how does it get there, so on and so forth. You do not want to create a simple list of things that the system should do. These end up being very kind of system-centered requirements. Next slide. The fourth one is that it says who the users are. Name names if possible, says what they know. And the reason you want to do this is because giving your people real names forces you to put them into perspective. It forces you to understand who they are, what their real interests are, right? Next slide. So what you would do with when you had a set of task examples, so notice that you don't just create one, you create a whole list of them, right? Is that you would circulate these descriptions to users people that you expect to be making use of your system, and you would actually go and evaluate whether or not these task descriptions are actually accurate, right? So you would ask your users if there's something that you missed, if it seems accurate, if it seems correct, if there are problems with them somehow, or if they have suggestions of tasks that you missed entirely, right, or parts of a task that you missed entirely. So you actually want to have people kind of give you the thumbs up that this is actually okay. The sixth piece is that as a set, you want to be able to argue that your set of tasks gives you very good coverage of sort of who your typical users are, who your occasional users are, who your unusual users are, so those are your extreme cases. You want to be able to identify which are your typical routine tasks, infrequent but important tasks, and also unexpected or odd tasks. Right? You want to be able to do all these things when you have that set. Okay? So that basically describes what phase one is about. It's about essentially identifying who your users are and what their tasks are, and then developing good task examples and evaluating them somehow. Okay, so moving on to phase two. This is the requirements phase. And so essentially, this is a judgment phase where you need to judge whether, you know, which of these things you're actually going to try to design for. Now, it's rare that you can actually develop an interface that is good for 100% of the users for 100% of their tasks. It's just rare that you're going to be able to do that. Everybody has their own idiosyncrasies, right? So in design, we typically say that if we're covering about 9 out of 10 users for 90% of their tasks, then we're usually doing a pretty good job. So that's your typical rule of thumb, all right? But it means, of course, that we're missing 10% of people or 10% of the tasks. And most of the time this is okay, but this is something to recognize and understand. Okay, so what you want to do then is to go through your tasks and also go through your users and identify, you know, which of these tasks you absolutely must include, which of them you should include, which one you could include, and then finally which of these you are going to decide to exclude, perhaps because it's not very common or very frequent, right? So you want to be able to do this for both your users and your tasks. And you want to have some rationale for it somehow, right? So you want to be able to describe why it is that you're excluding these people. So next slide. We're into phase three now, and this is essentially your brainstorming phase, and what we call it is designing through scenarios. So what you want to then do is create scenarios or stories with very thin plots that capture the tasks that a person would engage in. And then here's where you actually develop designs, perhaps on paper, where you sketch out an interface and how it works, and you try to see whether or not, and you try to fit these designs to those tasks. So you're trying to make these designs allow those tasks to flow as smoothly as possible, right? But generating these designs and writing them down on paper or sketching them out somehow, it forces you to be realistic about these interfaces, right? So you use tasks to get specific about possible designs, i.e. to generate ideas, to consider the real-world context of real users, and to consider how design features are actually going to work together, right? What would the user actually do? See step-by-step when performing this task, right? And so you're going to use this technique to generate a number of possible designs. Perhaps you choose one of these, or perhaps you choose multiple of these to go through the next walkthrough evaluation phase. Okay, so this is your brainstorming phase. Next slide. So now you're into phase four. And what you want to do is you want to actually go through what we call a walkthrough evaluation. And the reason you do this is that it's great for debugging an interface or finding out whether the interface is actually going to work the way that you expect it to for the tasks that you have. So here's the process. First, you select one of the task scenarios that you developed in phase one. Then, for each user step or action in the task, can you build a believable story that motivates the user's actions? Can you rely on your user's expected knowledge and training about the system, right? So you're looking for, are they motivated to do the next step? And two, are they going to know how to do the next step? If you can't, then you've located a problem in the interface. You want to make a note of this, and then you assume that it's been repaired, and then you go on to the next step in the task. And you keep doing this until you've basically made it to the end of your task. At the end, what you'll find is you've generated a list of problems that people have with the that people will have with the interface. And you'll also probably, based on this, come up with a bunch of ways of addressing this. So that's it. That's basically task-centered system design. Four major phases. And of these, I would say that the most crucial pieces are probably your first and your fourth phase. And in particular, you know, I put a lot of emphasis on understanding who your users are and understanding what the problems they have are. Obviously, you know, the second and third phase are also important in terms of using those things to, using that understanding to generate interfaces. But I want to focus mainly on the fourth phase because this is the technique that you can use to evaluate your interface without even bringing somebody in. Now, is it a perfect evaluation? No, it's not perfect. You're still using kind of your intuition of who these people are and what they're trying to do. But because this intuition is based on real research, you have reason to believe that what you're doing is actually reasonable or appropriate. Okay. So let's move on to the next slide here. I've already explained to you what the Cheap Shop catalog story is doing. Okay. Next slide. I've already described to you Fred Johnson's task, and we've already talked about it a little bit. So slide over a couple slides until you get to task two. So here's another example of a good task description. Notice how simple it is, but how detailed it is in terms of the specific bits of information. And notice how, and in particular, how concrete it is. And notice how it articulates this person's goals. And notice also that it doesn't actually describe how they would use any sort of interface. Okay? So I'll just read this. Mary Vornushka is price comparing the cost of a child's bedroom set consisting of a wooden desk, a chair, a single bed, a mattress, a bedspread, and a pillow, all made by Fernons Inc. She takes the description and total cost with her away to check against other stores. 3 hours later, she returns and decides to buy everything but the chair. She pays by credit card. She asks for the items to be delivered to her daughter's home at 31247 Lucinda Drive in the basement suite at the back of the house. Mary is elderly and arthritic. Next slide. So here's some discussion about this particular task. So like Mary, a reasonable number of store customers are elderly with infirmities that inhibit their physical abilities. A modest number of them also enjoy comparison shopping. Perhaps they have more time on their hands or because they are on low income. This task type is less frequent but still important. Although we consider a major purchase, this is a major purchase in terms of cost, the number of items purchased is not unusual. Delivery of large items is the norm, and many of the customers also pay by credit card if they're purchasing large orders. Okay. Next slide. So again, I'm just going to read this. Task example number 3. John Forum, the sole salesperson in the store, is given a list of 10 items by a customer who does not want to use the computer. The items are 4 pine chairs, 1 pine table, 6 blue placemats, 6 lower forks, 6 lower tablespoons, 6 lower teaspoons, 6 lower knives, 1 taut tricycle, 1 red ball, 1 silver croquet set. After seeing the total, the customer tells John he will take all but the silverware. The customer then decides to add 1 blue ball to the list. The customer starts paying by credit card, but then decides to pay cash. The customer tells John he wants the items delivered to his home the day after tomorrow. While this is occurring, 6 other customers are waiting for John. Right, so John's a pretty stressed out guy. John has been on staff for 1 week and is only partway through his training program. So now John is a really stressed out guy. So next slide. This task introduces the clerk as also a system user. Because the store has a high turnover in its staff, new employees such as John are also common. Thus, John reflects a rare but important group of users. The task type is less frequent, but still important. The task, while complex, is fairly typical, i.e. people making large number of purchases often help the clerk to help them. Similarly, clerks mention that customers often change their mind partway through a transaction, either by changing what they want to buy or changing how they want to pay for it. Customers, however, rarely give specific delivery dates, most wanting delivery as soon as possible. Lineups for clerks are common during busy times. So here is a set of 3 task examples. And you can see again how concrete and how goal-oriented these tasks are. But it's also concrete in terms of specific items and names, right? And then finally, once again, I'm just going to emphasize this one more time. The task descriptions do not include anything about the actual interfaces themselves. This allows us to evaluate different interfaces with the same task. Next slide. So you should be able now to understand how you can use task-centered design or why you would use task-centered design. You should be able to understand and articulate the 4 phases of task-centered design and understand how to develop good examples. In the next lecture, we'll talk about designing scenarios and engaging in the walkthroughs themselves. That's it for this time. Thanks.